Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everyone. Hi, friends. Welcome back to Barb Knows Best, the podcast. It is your co-host, Michelle Maros, and I am yet again sitting across the table from my mom, Barb. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Michelle. It's great to see you. Yet again, sitting across table from my mom, Barb. It's so great.
I know we recently, a couple weeks ago, put out the episode, about overthinking. And I realized in this moment that I am deeply overthinking my intro to these podcasts because I feel like I'm always saying the same thing and I try to make it slightly more interesting, but I also just, there's only a few things I could say to say hi.
And I think it's
fine.
And
you were like, just say it.
Let's get on with it. I think it's fine. Just hi. It's Barb Knows Best, the podcast. No, I think
maybe
it's great.
Maybe it'll be you one day introing us.
That could be iffy. That could be a little tricky.
Have a Freaky Friday situation.
A little dicey, but
how's it going being you today, Mother?
It's going great because I'm very, very, very excited to talk about this topic because it's been up.
Yeah.
And I know I say that often as well. And I think that's what's so beautiful and for me so fabulous about this podcast and why I love all of you who listen and all of you who subscribe and all of you who care is because we really tell you our lives real time. And this has kind of been up for me. And I think it could be up for a lot of people. And sometimes it's really insidious. So I'm really excited to talk about it.
Well, interestingly enough, this episode that we're recording right now is different, sort of, than any other episode because you're usually a big planner, and I'm a big planner, but we have to schedule our recordings in advance of when we're going to do it. And we've never done what we're doing today before, where you and I were talking, mom and daughter, basically, about life stuff. And as we were talking, I said, I think this would be a really good episode. And we are in a space where our recording equipment is here. And you said, let's just record.
Yeah.
Spur of the moment.
Yeah.
Unplanned.
Well, the weather is
unscripted.
So
we're always unscripted, but we've never just
unplanned.
Sat down.
Spontaneous.
Spontaneous. That's
yes.
The word.
Spontaneous.
To record. So
yeah, I'm really excited.
Let's see how this goes, but I'm excited because that was always the intention behind the show of just, we have these chats in our own lives and sharing them with all of you. And I think this is the epitome of that.
Yeah, you're right. They're all unscripted and they're all about chats that we have all the time, but because it's difficult to do things spontaneous because our lives, everyone's life, it really feels like, all of you listening, doesn't it feel like sometimes everything is just too planned, just too scripted? Everything has to be worked into the schedule. And so this is a real blessing. Well, it's a gorgeous day here in South Florida. Michelle and I went for a beautiful long walk and had the best talk. And I love the fact that we're both in the mindset and we're both like, yeah, let's just record right now when we get home. So welcome everyone. I'm really excited to be here with all of you today.
I often find that you get a lot of good chats when you go out and move with someone that you like and trust. Yeah. Like the topics flow freely. So here we are.
Something about that, being with someone you love and trust and have fun being with, and then moving the body. And then allowing the mind to free flow in terms of what it is you're feeling or what you're talking or what's been happening for you in the moment. It's just something about the synergy of all of that that is special.
I do remember a while ago when I went on a wellness retreat, they had an option of like a walk and talk therapy where you were going for a hike or a walk with a therapist and the synergy of moving your body and being connected to your body while talking about your stuff. And there's something to it. Mm-hmm. So
here we go.
Here we are.
Yeah.
All right. So Mom, you recently went away and came back and had a lot of time reflecting with yourself and your life and patterns that were, you know, at the surface, beneath the surface, dynamics in your life, what was working, what wasn't working. And you've mentioned quite often in our recent episodes just how challenging this last year, this end of last year, and even starting this 2024 have been for you. And I love that you were able to kind of go away and reflect and decompress and reset and recharge and all of those things and kind of really examine what's happening for you in your life, what you want, how you want to move forward, what you want to let go of, and really getting to the root of some of those patterns that are beneath the surface that are really having an impact on life, on your life, on the people in your life, and what you want to do about it. And so you came back from your little retreat, which we'll talk about at a later date, and you had this revelation that was fascinating to me because, I mean, we're super close, obviously. Again, we're living together, so we're extra close right now. And so I feel like I'm pretty intimate with your patterns and traits. But when you came back and talked about this one, it was surprising and a little bit unexpected to me. I wouldn't have necessarily pegged this dynamic as something that was really up for you. So I was fascinated to hear your insights and thoughts about it because I can relate to it deeply. And I think a lot of other people can relate to it deeply. And we've had a lot of interesting conversations about it. So I would love for this episode to be about this dynamic that you uncovered recently.
I love it. And I think just to back up just for a second, you all know me, I go on retreats quite often. And if I don't go to a retreat, I do go into nature from time to time, a few days here or maybe a week there. I love to be away from the external world. And I don't mean, you know, I love to go to the Redwoods in Northern California, or I love to go to the beach, or I love to go walk in the park. I love to be in nature. And so when I'm walking in the Redwoods, it's like me with the Redwoods is the most magical thing in the world for me. There is nothing more where my soul and my heart and my being loves than walking amongst the Redwood trees. So what's up for me here, it's very fascinating to me too, as I'm walking and I'm in silence and I'm by myself. So as I'm walking, you know, everything can come up when you're inside and you really are just one with yourself and the trees or one with yourself and nature, things will start to come up. And especially since I've been doing this for 40 years, it's very natural that things come up that are deep within me. And it's kind of like my heart, mind, or my soul, or my being is trying to help me work through and flush out, you know, feel the feelings of it, or remember, like, this is still down underneath there. You kind of want to look face to face at this and let it go. And so this particular thing that came up is that I have a particular penchant for wanting to be the favorite person in people's lives, or wanting to be the favorite liked person. Or it's very odd. And I don't think that I ever realized this. And I know why this is coming up now, as Michelle said, coming out of this 33-year marriage, being divorced in August of 2023, all the way up until the end of February 2024 has been very, very difficult for me. And what I realized when this came up for me is, now I realize, understand what's happening for me and why. I've been going around town because we do still live in the same town. And it's just been difficult. I've been trying to think of how do I want to navigate this? And what I realized underneath the surface, and I was totally unaware in the moment while I'm doing this, that's why being with those Redwoods or being in a place of quiet just with me is so critical. What I realized is this is what I've been doing. I've been going around to, we have so many friends in common and I love so many people of our friends. I've been kind of going around in the back of my mind without really realizing it, wanting to make sure that they still like me, wanting to make sure that, well, maybe, you know, he's dating, you know, a much younger person now. I'm wanting to make sure that I'm still their favorite. I mean, I'm like a little girl in middle school or like a girl in high school or whatever, wanting to make sure that I'm still the favorite.
And this came up when I was walking alone and I started crying. Oh my gosh, I cry a lot when I'm on these trips alone. Just allowing being with me. And I started crying. I thought, oh my gosh, Barb, this is an old, old, old habit or an old feeling or an old thing inside of you that first came to the surface when I checked myself into treatment in 1984, 40 years ago, this October, for bulimia. The person that was running the food addiction, bulimia, anorexia part of the treatment center was a gentleman. And I remember checking myself in. You want to say something, Michelle?
I don't want to interrupt you, but I wanted to just say something really quickly before, because this is a powerful story, an example of this.
Yes.
And before you dive into that,
okay,
I just wanted to say that two things. One, I think what was most powerful about this coming to the surface for you in your time away and in nature is you had no distractions from anything that was happening around you. You were completely with yourself and forced to be with the thoughts, the feelings, the emotions. And that's really where you can start to realize some of these things that are just beneath the surface. Because I don't think in theory, a lot of us think that, oh, wanting to be liked isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I think when it gets to an extreme, that's where there's some manipulative tendencies and things like that. But at the surface, when you just want to like and be liked, I mean, that's part of life. So that's why I think this is a kind of sneaky pattern, because in our rational minds, we're like, oh, there's nothing wrong with this. So I think it's interesting that without distraction, this kind of came to the surface. And secondly, what I wanted to point out before you dive in is, as you've been speaking lately about your divorce and this process, and you know, the divorce was final in August, and you know, here we are in April, and think about what month we're in. It's a long time. And I think you've had people, you and I have had conversations with ourselves like, okay, like we got to move on. But the interesting thing about these situations, and I think breakups in general, is you have the periods of mourning the romantic relationship. That's hard. Having to redo your entire life, figure out what your life looks like, especially for someone like you, who was like basically a huge, huge chunk of your life where that was what you were used to. But I think this most recent phase of from the end of last year to now has been the challenge for you has been now reckoning with the friendships like you were talking about. How do I navigate my social circumstances when everything was so enmeshed? Who are my friends? Who are his friends? How do I navigate this when I don't want contact with this person? How do I, like you said, I want to be the favorite. And that's, I think, the interesting, because I had that situation when I went through difficult breakups where I'm like, well, they should be my friends. And then that's another morning when they choose someone else. Or when, you know, the friends kind of fall away and go with the other person. And so I think I just wanted to differentiate, because that's where breakups are so tricky, because there's so many layers. You have the romantic, the social, the friendships, the habits. And I think this dynamic of favoritism is super interesting in this perspective, because you get to that point where, how do I hold on to the people that I do still have left?
And thank you for doing that, Michelle. And I think what's so amazing about this conversation today, and where I'm 67 years old, and I have been in therapy a lot over the past 40 plus years on and off. And so I've dealt with this on and off a lot. And I think where it really starts, when I think about being in therapy, and one of the things that came up when I was in treatment with my therapist was this, you're right, this is very different from wanting to be a people pleaser. This is like wanting to be the favorite, wanting to be the person. I think the best way that I can describe it, and you and I have been laughing about this so much because I've been laughing about it, is remember the movie, My Best Friend's Wedding? Mm-hmm. And Julia Roberts, at the end of the movie, she says to him, choose me, choose me. I mean, I can almost hear her voice. I could hear her voice in my head as I'm walking in the forest, basically, like, mm-hmm. choose me. And
also Grey's Anatomy. Meredith Grey.
Yes.
Yes. Choose me, pick me.
Choose me, pick me. Yes.
To Derek.
Yes, yes, yes. And so after I was done crying, I was laughing so hard because I think it's what you were saying, Michelle. It is so powerful to be with yourself in quiet and to have that relationship with yourself. And why this was so important that this came up is because I needed it because I was in that same toxic, not a good pattern of wanting people to choose me in that same old, you know, archaic habit that I had years ago had reared its head again. As you said, 33 years in a relationship and 33 years with so many good friends and amazing people. And it doesn't mean that I can't still have relationships with some of those people. We all know when you go through breakups like this, it changes. And so I've been, as you said, mourning some of that without even really realizing what's going to happen because things are still kind of unfolding, but also understanding that, wait a minute, I don't have to be the favorite person. And as I was saying before, it all reared its head when I checked myself into treatment. And that was what was so cool about it. And I had no idea, mm-hmm. but the therapist, the psychologist that was running that section of the treatment center, the food section, at that time I was 28 years old and the idea of a authority figure, me being in a treatment center is like, ooh, I want him to like me or I want to be the favorite. I mean, that was just the first thing. And I don't know, but he was an extraordinary human being and I credit him and that whole treatment center, 40 years of recovery from bulimia. He was extraordinary. And so he actually, I guess, caught on to that, like from the first moment that he met me. And so he ignored me the whole 6 weeks that I was in treatment. He never directly spoke to me. Mm-hmm. He would walk right past me in the hall. We would be in group therapy. There was a lot of group therapy in this treatment center. He would never call on me. And then I would go into therapy with my individual therapist. And I would say, what is going on? And she would say to me, what is this triggering you that you need to have him like you, or you need to be his favorite? Let's work on this, Barb. Mm-hmm. So we worked on it almost every time I saw her. Finally, she would say, let's work on something else in your family. It was just such a big deal. So eventually after about week four and a half or so, you know, it subsided. I start, you know, all the therapy with my single individual therapist there and then all the other group therapy. It finally subsided. I started to get the message that I did matter individually on my own and I didn't need the approval of other people, even though he was the person running the whole show. So when you leave treatment, or back then, when you left treatment, they did kind of a little, we all, you know, were sitting in a chair like up front and the people that ran the center and the therapist, they would say a little thing about you. I want to say graduation, but you're never graduated from treatment. You're never graduated from recovery. You're always in recovery. So, but it was kind of like a graduation. So when they got to me, the head of the treatment center, he stood up and he said, this has been the hardest 6 weeks that I've ever had in my life, that I've never had to completely ignore a patient. And I chose to completely ignore you, Barbara, because I saw how desperately you wanted me to like you. I could feel from you how your whole being was caught up in me liking you. And then what you wanting me to have you as your my favorite. I could just feel that energy from you so strongly the minute you got here. And I knew that if I succumbed to that and if I paid any bit of attention to you, you would not get the message that this does not matter. And I started crying. He actually started crying. The people that I was in treatment with started crying. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so true. And so it changed my life. But why I'm telling this story, there are all of these habits that are very, you know, toxic, such a buzzword today, and I don't mean toxic, but that are not in our best interests, that are there inside of us that we're meant to uncover. So just like, you know, peeling the layers of, there's always a layer. And so the layer of this particular onion or this particular core that was inside of me that I needed to get down to was that, wow, I was kind of back in that same mode 40 years ago. Where I felt like I wanted to try to get these friends of mine to choose me, for me to be the favorite. And I say all of that because I hope it resonates for people listening that sometimes we're not aware, as you said, Michelle, we're not aware that not only do we want to be liked, we want to be the favorite.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal. The favorite, I mean, come on, we have lots of favorites in life, and it's just a very insidious and a very destructive habit. And it can really mess with you big time of thinking that your self-worth or your value or anything about you in life depends on another human being thinking that you're their favorite.
Totally. That's such a powerful story. And I can't wait to dive into it more, but let's take a quick break.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. So many things I want to say.
I'm glad. I'm just grateful that you and I get to have these conversations as mother-daughter. And I'm just also grateful that all of you are here listening. I am a little bit on the verge of tears because I really want you to know that this is a special, special community for both of us.
Totally.
To have all of you here. And I love you all so very much. And that this is really powerful.
It is. So the concept of being the favorite, certainly I think when you drill down into personality and human nature, where does that stem from? And I think it's worthiness and being accepted and loved and probably like abandonment, right?
Yeah.
The fear of like not having anyone. So you want to find someone that will claim you as the best so they'll never leave you. I mean, at least that's kind of how, if I think about my own life and where this dynamic has come, I think if I can be someone's favorite, they'll never want to lose me.
I think that's very true, Michelle. And I also, as I said, I was in therapy. I was in therapy at the treatment center. It couldn't have been a more perfect place to be.
Right. And I think if someone thinks that facilitator was being like abusive or harmful, like this was the safe space for that to happen.
Yeah. And he wasn't being abusive.
I know,
harmful.
But I'm just saying, I think some people could be like, wow, that was a really rude thing of him to do, like risky. He could have really harmed you or whatever. You were in a container that was safe and supportive, so that it was the perfect space to learn that lesson.
100%. And he wasn't mean and he wasn't rude. And I think absolutely, Michelle, he and my individual therapist, they were in partnership with this. I mean, she was telling him whatever I was saying. And so, no, it was a very safe space. And not only safe space, they were lovingly behind the scenes trying to help me. He saw how dramatic this was. And he really wanted to help me big time. So I am so grateful. And you're so right. It's important to make sure that these kind of things are done in a safe space and not done in a way that's harmful. And this was the opposite. And to answer your question, what came out in that beginning therapy of my life at 28 years old, what came out was that I was the oldest of five. And many of you have heard, I've told pieces of my story and I'm in the process of writing my memoir. So you're going to hear, I'm so excited. But anyway, I was the oldest of five, two alcoholic parents. And we were really struggling to make ends meet as a family. And so I wanted to be my mom's favorite. I was the oldest and I wasn't. I wasn't her favorite at all. And so I think a lot of it stemmed from that, from really wanting the approval and the love and the support from my mother. And no diss to her. I had a really difficult relationship with her and I spent a lot of years in therapy over it. And I made peace with it. She made peace with it. We had a very lovely last few years of her life. She did the best she could. Mm-hmm. You know, back then it wasn't okay to go to therapy and it wasn't okay to this. And you just made it do. And you just tried to do the best that you could back then. So, but as a young child and as a young adult and all the way up to 28 years old, I didn't get that. And so I was really angry and I was really hurt and I wanted to be loved. I wanted to be loved in a way that I felt like she cared. So I wanted to be her favorite. So I never was her favorite. And she even said that before she died. I'm really sorry that I treated you
with nothing but love and respect. I know that I didn't act like you mattered, and I didn't act like you were my favorite. So it's just interesting. So that whole idea of being a favorite, you're right, Michelle, I wanted someone in my life that valued me so much that I could be their favorite. And so now 40 years later at 67 years old, why I laughed after I came out of the cry of seeing that this whole habit had reared its head again in some weird way is that I'm my own favorite. I recognize after 40 years of practice and therapy and all of the things that I have done experientially in my life that I am never alone and that I always have myself. And that's why I love going walking in the redwoods or love going on retreats by myself. I am my own favorite. And other people are going to like me, and I'm going to have so many loving and caring and beautiful friends, and maybe not. It's all that's the way that it goes, but I'm never at the mercy of worrying about, is someone going to care about me? Am I going to be alone? Am I going to be abandoned? Am I going to be on my own? All of those things are, I guess, the way I look at it today, I love myself and I love my life right now. And I think picking up all the pieces of the 33-year marriage and looking at how now I start to navigate and how now I start to move through this life, because it's almost, I feel like it's not even a new chapter that I'm in. And I know I've said that, I think, quite often to friends and people and even on this podcast. It's actually a whole new book. So it's not lost on me that I'm writing my memoir. It's a whole new book. I'm 67. And so I've got, I don't know how many years left.
Okay.
No, a lot. No. I meant that in a positive way. I have a lot of years left, but I am on the backside of it. And that's what makes this so cool. It's a whole new book. It's a whole, what is it? A whole new world.
I will say, chiming in separately in our talk, a walk-in talk today, you were like, right as we were about to get home, you were like, you know, I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but do you know what you'll do when I die? And I was like, what?
I didn't say what you will do.
What will you do with me?
What will you do with me? Because we've never had that talk.
I was like, hello. So now you get the full experience. And so usually in the past, I'd be like, Mom, we don't need to do that right now. But I feel like I'm at an age where it's appropriate where I turned it back on you. I said, well, do you know what you're going to do with me if I die?
And I said, yes.
And you were,
I do.
Like,
no, I said, yes.
I know,
I do.
But I know you're not used to me putting it back.
No, you're exactly right.
But yeah, that's part of our dynamic.
I think that's the cool thing about this. I love the idea that we brought this to the podcast. There are two things I want the takeaways to be. One, that you can have something rear its head again. Like you thought, wow, I went into therapy for this 28 years ago and it came up and it was so dramatic and so traumatic and so enlightening and so life-changing. And now here I am 40 years later and it came up in a different form, a different time, but it's actually the same thing, but in a different way. And the beauty and it's so fabulous for me to be talking about this is that it didn't catch me, if that makes any sense. Like I'm not caught in it thinking that it's real. Oh my gosh, wait a minute. What am I going to do? And you know, I didn't go down that. I cried at first because I thought, oh no, you're kidding me. Barbara, you're back in this situation. And then I started to laugh. No, you're not back in this situation. This is replicating a lot of the same feelings that you had 40 years ago in that person of Barb at 28 years old that needed to be a favorite. That's not you anymore. And well, that's why this is funny now. It's funny in a way like, wow, wait, it's not who I am. The truth is that is not who I am. And it gave me the truth of, okay, now what do I need to look at the situation with my friends and the community that I live in? What are some of the things that are true and that are real for me? And it's just such a beautiful place to be when you don't beat yourself up and you don't say, oh my gosh, after 40 years, I'm not over this yet.
Right.
And you just say, wow, this came in another form, in a different place. Now, what is my response going to be? What is the truth of my life? And it's such an amazing place to be. And I want all of you to hear that because I think many of you have been in this place, or maybe all of you have been in this place before, where you thought you learned the teaching, or you thought you'd been through the hell and back, And now that's done. And now let's move on to the next Helen back, or let's move on to the next teaching. And I'm telling you, some of these teachings come back in a different form, in a different look, in a different style, a different mm-hmm. age, a different generation, or whatever it is. And so you're not going backwards. If you feel that way sometimes when the same teaching comes over and over, you're actually moving forward. And the only way to move backwards if you think that it's true.
Right.
If you think it's true about yourself. Wow, I am this person. This therapy did nothing for me for 40 years. Yeah, if you buy into that false narrative, which you talk about a lot, Michelle, false narratives in the mind, that it's true. The minute you say, wait a minute, this is not true. I'm now just at another place and it's replicating itself. It's kind of shape-shifted into a different form. Then you can start to laugh.
Right.
Because you can start to really love yourself even more and say, wow, thank you for the gift of this teaching. Even though it was hard for the past 6 months, thank you for the gift of it. Because I see, and I see where the truth is.
Right.
And I'm really grateful for myself. And I'm really proud of myself. I know you want to get in here.
No.
I'm really proud of myself. So it's really wonderful. I just want you to honor yourself. If you find yourself back in a same familiar pattern that you thought you had moved through, or you thought you had fixed, or whatever the words are that we use, if you're seeing that you're in that same, similar, not same, it's never the same, in that similar place, it's not a bad thing. It's actually a blessing.
Well, that's kind of why I have some issues with the language that we use around healing, and I've healed from this, or I've even processed this, and even kind of the duality or the black and white nature with which we, the lens with which we look at ourselves when we're trying to process things and quote unquote better ourselves, and not calling you out. But I think sometimes that's the dynamic where we get into trouble in our own relationship, where sometimes you'll be like, I thought we worked through this already. How are we still having disagreements about blah, 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 6 years later? Or I thought that this dynamic was over. Life is so fluid where I don't think we ever should seek to get to a space where we're quote unquote healed or over it. I think that we're always learning and picking up new pieces to apply to the situations when they arise. And it's like life is in the gray. I think about this so much that if we can start to get into the gray of it's not good or bad, it's in the middle. It's not healed or unhealed. It's somewhere in the middle. It's not we're falling back into old patterns or we're moving forward. It's like we are where we are in this moment. And I think so often, and I felt this way a lot, especially when I was going through difficult breakups and trying to process and learn and not fall into old habits. And I would, and it's like, wait, I didn't do enough work to not have this happen again. But life is fluid and it's going to happen, and we're going to be tested, and we're going to have situations that trigger us, and we're going to be asked to come face to face with some of these situations that we thought we were quote unquote over. And that's not a bad thing. It's just part of life. I think for me and what's helped me in these situations is, okay, how am I handling it that makes me feel better about the situation in total? Am I acting in alignment or saying things that are in alignment with me or doing things that are in alignment with me? And am I maybe handling it in a slightly better way than I would have in the past? And that's what gives me the confidence and the positive feelings about everything that's happened up until that moment.
And I love that, Michelle. And I think that's why I think I always use the present tense, healing. You'll never hear me say I have recovered from bulimia.
Right.
In the addiction world, it's always I am in recovery for bulimia. I am always learning. I'm always growing. So I think it's really crucial to not use the past tense, healed, recovered, changed, and use the present tense. Stay in the present moment, as you said, Michelle, that stay in the present moment, being with life on life's terms every single moment of the day. So it is fluid. It is always with the ing, learning, growing, becoming, recovering. And I think what that has done for me, it has been the greatest thing that I have learned. I think it has to be one of the top five to not use the past tense and think that I'm done mm-hmm. and to think it's over or think that I've done that. Now I'm on to this. Because I think we are always growing. We're always learning. And I think especially when you're dealing, I want to put this caveat in here, especially if you're recovering from trauma, from very serious trauma, which I am and which you are. We are products of very serious traumatic events in our lives, and especially in childhood. So I think if you're recovering from traumatic events, it's going to rear its head at some point. I know I'm into that rearing its head. It's going to come out somewhere in some way and some other life-changing thing in your life when you go through a major, you know, one of those top five things in life that are very dramatic or traumatic changes. Divorce is one of them. And 33 years is huge. Same for you. You're the child of this whole divorce and everything. So I think the greatest thing that I have been able to learn and to do, and I continue to learn and to do, is not live in the past tense. I did that. I'm done with that. I'm recovered from that. I'm healed from that. That never has served me very well, because in some form it'll come up in some different way. And I'll say, wow, I thought, like you said, Michelle, I thought I was done with that. What's the matter with me?
Yeah.
I really didn't heal.
It's setting yourself up for self-criticism and disappointment and thinking that everything that you're doing to better yourself doesn't work. I mean, for someone that is actively working to release that narrative that things don't work for me, I'm some sort of outlier where it's my destiny in life to be plagued with these issues, that I'll never get to the whatever place in my mind that I'm trying to get to. When you have these situations that are going to come up in life, because that's life, it's easy to allow yourself to let that fuel those narratives of, oh my gosh, all of this work that I've done on myself, all of the healing, all of the journaling, all of the processing, it doesn't work. And it didn't matter because look at me now, it's still happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also where we can get into the expectation of healing. And how do we release those expectations and just kind of go along for the ride? Because I think if we think in our minds, I'm going to put in X, Y, and Z amount of work and time to get over this or release that or to process this with some sort of destination, again, we're setting ourselves up for some sort of disappointment because we don't know where the healing journey is going to take us.
Well, and I also think it's broader than just healing. Healing is a major part of it, but really it runs through our whole lives. I think for me, what I recognized in this journey is that we're setting ourselves up. So if I felt like I kind of mastered or went through something and like, oh, I got this now. Whoa, I got it. I don't need to be all the people don't need to pick me as the favorite. You know, if we think we've mastered that and we got it and we got the aha moment, and then it comes back in some form, or we actually see ourselves not being that person that we thought we were. I believe for myself that this is where the imposter syndrome gets born. Oh, I thought I was healed, or I thought that I overcame that, or I thought that I actually am a person that's confident and can move through life. I'm not. Look, it's still here. I'm a fake. I'm a phony. I really am not the person that I think that I am. And people don't really know who I am now because they don't know who I am. I'm saying that I did all these things, but I'm not really this person. And I think it writes a whole story of that idea that, oh, we kind of mastered it, but now we've fallen back into a version of it. So we're not really who we think we are. And then if you are a people pleaser, if you're someone that wants the other people in the outside world to like you or to respect you, then we think, wow, if they really knew who I am,
right,
they really wouldn't like me. So for me, that's where because I always felt like an imposter. I felt like, if people actually knew my story or if people actually knew who I was. And I think it got born that way, that I would be making progress, or I'd be thinking I got this. You know, if you're the kind of person that wants to check it off the list and get it done and think that you got it, and then you don't have it because life brought you another curveball that looked a little bit different, but is kind of similar, it's a problem. And I think that for me, it started to erode that theory of imposter syndrome. We are incredible human beings. We are have the capability inside of us to be confident and loving and caring and successful and all the things. It's the outside world that takes that our actions and our thoughts about the outside world that starts to erode that. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have to start trusting ourselves more, believing that we are in, as you said, on this journey of life. Life is very fluid. And I think also one of the problems is if you ask any person around you, you know, if you are around someone that you feel vulnerable enough that you can share certain sensitivities and things with and that you trust, and you said, you know, I just don't know why I have to be people's favorite, or I don't know why I have to have people like me. Almost 9 out of 10 people, and I don't know if you guys will agree with this, but I certainly have seen it, especially if they're my good, dear, deep friends, they'll say, just Barb, just tell yourself that it doesn't matter if they like you. It doesn't matter if you're not their favorite. It doesn't matter what they think. And don't we even teach that, Michelle? And a lot of, you know, it doesn't matter what other people think of you. It matters what you think of you.
Yep.
Well, that all sounds great, but it's not the greatest advice, actually. We know that already. We intellectually know that, but how can we get that to the heart? And I believe I've gotten it to my heart, not thinking that it might not rear its head another time in another place, but I've gotten into my heart because I stop and I ask myself, wait, what is the truth here?
Right.
Not what other people say or what other people think. Of course, what other people think and do matters. Of course, I care about people. I'm a very loving, caring, compassionate person. Of course. And the brain can't disseminate, well, you care about people, compassion, so then you got to care about what they think of you all the time. You know, it's like that very wheel, that hamster on the wheel that you're trying to get off of, because it encompasses everything. So of course, I'm going to care about people, but I also want to care about truth.
Right.
And so get into the habit of asking yourself, wait, I'm in this place where I want to be a favorite, or I want these people to like me more than maybe they like other people. Or I want to have these people in my life forever, or that clinging or that attachment that sometimes we get. Just pause for a moment and ask yourself, wait a minute, what's happening here? What is the truth of it? And so I will tell myself, I'm confident. I'm okay with myself. I'm okay if someone doesn't like me. It's okay if I'm not their favorite. I've worked through this. I'm still learning and growing, and it's okay that this has now come up again in my life. This is another layer, another level where I have to reaffirm for myself that I am enough and I am worthy just who I am, just as I am. Like, say to yourself, I love myself just as I am right now in this moment.
I love that. That's so important. And let's take another quick break. And we are back. So going back a little bit, I wanted to touch on this, especially when you were talking about the abandonment issues and that's what stems often from, or that's the root of this favoritism dynamic, is the fear of being abandoned or left behind or not wanted or liked anymore. And that's why we want to be the favorite. I think that's so often why we encourage on the show becoming your own best friend and establishing that strong relationship with yourself and learning to like and love yourself and accepting yourself and really valuing the strengths and the positive qualities that you have within. Because when you have that strong foundation and relationship, you won't abandon yourself. And I think that if you are like us, which I think many of you might be, you do have that fear of other people leaving or abandoning you. But again, when we zoom out of life, life is fluid. Relationships come and go. How can we release the attachment and the expectation that relationships or specific relationships will be a certain way or look a certain way or last a certain amount of time? And trust that the foundation that you have from within will get you through whatever happens externally with the relationships on the outside. And I don't know that might be a little like esoteric, but it's helped me a bit in life where, yes, of course, if a relationship ends, I get triggered or something happens, but I don't spiral as long as I used to. And I come back to myself quicker than I used to. And that's where I feel like I can say, okay, I'm healing, because it's not taking me out to the degree that it might have in the past. And that's where I find so much empowerment and confidence and strength, and knowing like, okay, life is difficult and we all are looking through life with our own unique lens and have our own unique circumstances and our own unique personalities and traits. And I might think that this person is going to be with me forever and something might happen to change that. But I can know that if I'm showing up for life every day, grounded in myself, connected with myself, saying and doing things that are in alignment with who I am and what I want, I know that it's not going to have any sort of reflection of who I am and my worthiness and my ability to be loved. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's perfect. It's beautiful, Michelle. It's really hard. All of what you're saying is hard. You know, everything that we're talking about on this podcast almost every single week, these are hard things. These are difficult things. These are life things. And in some version, in some form, we all deal with. And I feel like what I've learned a lot in the past few weeks of this retreat and this being by myself, what I learned this time around is, I don't even know how to say this because I'm so excited to say it. Like, I've known this already, and we do know this, that everything in life is impermanent. Nothing ever stays the same. Everything is always changing. We know this. We know it in our head. And I think a lot of us, we even know it in our heart, because we've been through some of the ups and the downs and the tragedies and the sorrows and the pain and the suffering of life. So we know this, but we're always so surprised sometimes when it happens, and we're thinking that we've got to cling to things, or, oh my gosh, I can't lose this too, or I can't have this happen too. So it's very interesting for me in this past few weeks to look at my clinging to the idea of my past, to the idea of the past 33 years, my clinging to, oh my gosh. And so in looking at it and kind of taking, as you say a lot, Michelle, zooming out to that, you know, that 150-foot view or whatever it is, and not being so enmeshed in it, it really is like, I'm clinging to this. Do I not trust myself that this next book of my life or this next episode of my life is going to be filled with all kinds of things that will bring me joy, but it's also going to be filled with some pain and suffering, because that's the way life is. And trusting the timing of my life, trusting the timing of myself, trusting that I have all the things within me that I can navigate any storm that life sends my way. Trusting, you know, Maya Angelou says it beautifully. It's been one of the quotes that I've lived by my whole life. You know, that every storm runs out of rain. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing is permanent. And when we can really get that in our hearts, we can go through the pain and suffering and come out the other side, not continuing to contribute to more of the suffering. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've learned this in some of my retreats. You know, there's two kinds of suffering.
I know you're going to talk about this deeper.
I will at some point.
Yeah.
But like, I really got this. And so it's changed my life. There's two kinds of suffering. There's the suffering that leads to more suffering, which is what we're talking about. The suffering that we keep piling on. You know, a tragedy or traumatic thing happens, or some sorrow or some pain happens in our lives, and we cling to it, and we aren't okay that it happened. And we, as you say, Michelle, we hold on to it and hold on to it and hold on to it and hold on to it. And it causes more pain and causes more suffering. And the mind is running amok with all the things that it's telling us it went wrong, and what's the matter with us, and what's the matter with life, and don't trust, and don't open your heart anymore, and don't do all of these things. So there's a suffering that leads to more suffering. And then there's a suffering that leads to the end of suffering. And for me, when I think about that this past few weeks and what I've gone through this past year and 2 years and the past 6 months, is that the suffering that leads to the end of suffering doesn't mean that suffering is going to disappear from my life or from our lives. It means that suffering is just that, suffering. And I was suffering an incident of wanting to be the favorite, choose me, which was a little girl dynamic that I enacted, you know, well over well over 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 63 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's all it is. It's the pain and suffering of a reenactment from what happened when I was a child. So I think that's, it's the interpretation of really understanding things and not trying to make them something that they're not, and really try to get to the truth and the core of what's real. And what is real is we are going to have pain and suffering. We're going to have sadness. We're going to have a tremendous emotions. And that's what they are. It's pain, suffering, and emotions, and how we navigate that, knowing that we are strong, we are capable, we are loving, we are caring, we are amazing human beings, shortens that suffering and doesn't cause us to double down and triple down on more suffering from the same event or from the same episode that's happening in our lives.
Yeah, that's so true. And I can't wait to talk about suffering more in another episode, because I know you have a lot of good thoughts about that. Before we close out, I wanted to just, and maybe this will be for another episode too, to dive deeper into this, just touch on the dynamic. I know that when we try to be someone's favorite, we think we have the good intentions of being the best friend or showing up for people in a way that'll make us, make them like us more, or any of those intentions or hidden desires that we have when we try to be the favorite. And interestingly, when we were talking about this concept to one of our close friends, it's so fascinating when you can see someone else's perspective, especially when it's different from your own. I think that, and he said to us, I think sometimes he's someone where everyone wants to be his favorite. And it's funny because he's so well-liked and he's so fun and he's so charismatic and he has all of the qualities where he's someone that's a magnet for friends. He has a ton of friends. And so we joke that everyone wants to be his favorite. And when we were talking about this dynamic with him, you, me, and him, you said to him, I even wanted to be your favorite. And I know I've wanted to be his favorite. Like, we all want to be his favorite. And he said to you, like, Barbara, like, you don't have to be the favorite. Like, I love you. You know, is that not enough? And what was interesting in talking to him is I could see how he was starting to get a little bit offended or hurt, feeling like what he was giving to you and how he was treating you and how he was prioritizing you in his life. He felt that by you wanting more and having the favoritism dynamic was coming across to him as that you're not enough. You're not showing up enough for me. However you're treating me isn't enough because I need more to feel special in your life. And he was and could have felt like, wow, you know, I do this, this, and this. We do this, this, and this. We communicate, like, that's not enough for you. And feeling hurt by that, which is a completely different dynamic and viewpoint of how we would view it. You know, we're just trying to get that love and attention and affection that we're craving. But someone else with another viewpoint could be like, I'm giving you what I can. And why is that not enough? And so it was fascinating for me to hear his perspective and hear why he could be frustrated with us sometimes. If he's feeling, even if it's not being spoken, but if he's feeling like we're like, hey, why don't you want to spend time with us? Why aren't we the best? Why aren't we your priority? Like, jokingly, he could be offended by that because he's like, hey, I'm prioritizing you the best I can. What do you mean? Is that not good enough?
Yeah, it's really interesting.
It was a fascinating to see the other side of it and how it can feel manipulative and how it can make the people in our lives feel like they're not enough.
Yeah. It's a very insidious feeling. It's a very insidious dynamic. And I think you used the S word because I totally forgot it. This is the word that encapsulates everything that we're saying. Special. We want to be special.
Yeah.
You know, favorite, people pleasing. We want to be special. We want to be special in people's lives. And I think the most important thing to remember is the truth of it is, first of all, that you are special. You are already special. You are a unique, amazing, incredible human being. So start to really recognize that you are already special. And that craving the specialness from another person is not going to make it any better or any worse. It's just going to make, it's actually when you start to crave the specialness or the clinging or the attachment to another person, you start to erode your own feelings about yourself. That's what I found as I was going through this deep dive and this deep discovery the past few weeks. Like, I already know that I'm special. Yeah. I already know that I'm a great human being. I already know all of this. But sometimes we forget it and we fall into these patterns that, as you were saying, Michelle, they not only do we recognize that they're not in our best interest and not helping us lead the best, most loving, caring, successful life that we want to lead, but we're also not, it's not helpful for the other people that we really care about in our lives. This friend of ours, it was such a wonderful conversation. And he was admitting to us some of the things. It just was a powerful conversation about how if we could just be confident and sure in ourselves and really love and accept ourselves deeply and love and be caring and compassionate in the external world and make sure that we're asking ourselves when we have this twinge of clingingness or attachment or I've got to be the one.
Neediness.
Whatever word it is, special. I've got to be the special one. You know, when those are kind of words that I take a pause. Wait a minute. I think I got to be the special one. I mean, it's the thing that went through my mind when I first day I walked into that treatment center, October 31st, 1984. I got to be the special one. Right. He's the boss. So I think at this point in life, for me, it's like, okay, wait a minute. What's happening here? And if you're going through a really traumatic time or really changing time of anything, it's very hard and you may have some suffering along the way for a month or 2 months or whatever. But I think the sooner you can start to recognize, yes, I'm suffering. Yes, I'm in pain. Now, what action can I take that's true that will help me move through the suffering and pain? And the best action you can take is first acknowledging it. I'm in suffering. I'm in pain. And some of the things in the stories I'm telling myself just aren't true. Let me take a moment with myself and sort this out. Nothing that your mind is telling you when you're in a traumatically triggered event or you're in something that's come before and you're not understanding why it's back again, your mind is feeding you stuff that's not true. So you have to take the pause and you have to just say, okay, wait a minute. Let me just think this through and let me not, you use the A word too, Michelle. Let me not abandon myself in this moment. Let me not throw myself out the window and figure out how am I going to make all this external world and all these people out here like me better or understand that I really am a good person or want to choose me or want me to be or want, I want to be the special one. It's kind of interesting. So if any of this resonates, just know that you're amazing and that you are worthy just by virtue of being this extraordinary human being. And if you're having some thoughts about this, just take a pause and sit with the pain and the suffering of whatever is happening in your life, even if it's just for a minute. Don't sit too long. Don't allow yourself to go down a hole and really suffer greatly in that moment. But just maybe take a quick peek. Like, okay, what is causing me this pain? What is causing me this suffering?
Yeah.
And it will help you start to just asking yourself that question alleviates, for me, it alleviates a good 60%.
Yeah. And just knowing that.
Of the suffering.
Yeah. And just knowing that those kinds of behaviors, the clinging, the neediness, the constantly needing the reassurance or that energy that you're putting out into your relationships often does the opposite of what you're trying to achieve. I think when people feel like you're trying to subconsciously manipulate to going up the rank of their roster of friends, that feels manipulative and feels like, wait, what? They know I love them. They know I'm there for them. Why do they need more? Why do they feel like that's not enough? It tends to push people away, even subconsciously. They might not know it or recognize it, but it doesn't feel great when you have a relationship. Because I think the example that we gave, we're at the place now where we can say, okay, we're close enough, we're solid enough. If something's up, we'll communicate it. If something that's that, if I did something, if you did something, if we did something, we're going to talk about it. We're not going to let things go by the wayside or build up. So we're trusting in each other in this relationship that we're not going to let things fester if something's bothering us. And I think that's a beautiful place to be in relationships, where you can trust in yourself and the people in your life to know that if something's gone astray, it's going to be brought to the front, the surface, and you won't have to have that worry or anxiety of, I need to do more to keep it.
I love this, Michelle. And I'll just end with this. That's the million-dollar problem, if you want to call it that, or that's the opportunity, because we think that we want to be the favorite, or we think we want to be the special one, or we don't want to be abandoned, all the things that we've talked about in this past hour, we think we want to do. And so if we just are nicer, and if we just please a little bit more, and we're just a little bit more kind, and we just try to do everything we can to get, we're actually doing the opposite.
Yep.
In most instances, we're doing the opposite. So we're never going to get that result. Not only are we abandoning ourselves, there are more often than not possibilities that we're pushing the other people away. So we're not really, there's never going to be a good outcome when we have to cling and we have to be needy and we have to have something or someone in the outside world come in alignment with what we need or what we want in that moment.
Yep.
Where we are not whole in ourselves, we've got to somehow make something in the external world different, or we can't function, or we can't make it okay. And that is a big, huge aha for me. Mm-hmm. That whenever I feel like something in the external world is not okay, and it's happening, and I have no control over it, and I know I don't have control over it in my brain, but I can't accept it. I have to get something out there to change. It can never be.
Yeah.
It can never be. So I think the end of the second kind of suffering that leads to the end of suffering, means, okay, I'm suffering. How can I move through this suffering and get back to the barb in this moment? How can I get back to the present moment and deal with what's happening right now in the moment? How can I work through all the trauma or healing or whatever's happening, no time frame, and then now get back to, instead of thinking that something out there has to change, I got to fix it, I got to control it, and then I have so many judgments about it, and then I start comparing myself to a lot of other people. It's a rabbit hole that we can't get out of, and it is a no-win situation, because it's not possible. We can't do that. And so I love all of you so much. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Michelle. I love you.
Thanks,
dearly.
Mom.
I am so grateful that we have the opportunity as mother and daughter to speak like this and to have these walk and chats.
I love it.
And I love it. Thank
you. Such a great chat. I had so much fun doing this.
Me too.
So spur of the moment. And I loved talking about this, because it was really helpful for me to come to this realization. So I hope it's helpful for any of you who might struggle with this dynamic. And if you want to hear us talk more about it, let us know. As you all are aware, since you've hopefully been listening to us for a while, we could go on and on and on and on and on. So it's super fun. And thank you, Mom, for bringing this up to us and to me from your own personal experiences and sharing with us, as always.
You are always very welcome. I love it.
And thank you, everyone, for listening to the show and being such a beautiful community and being so supportive. We do love you all and appreciate you all so much. And we don't take your support for granted. We're just very, very grateful for you all. If you haven't yet, make sure that you're liked and subscribed to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, so they are always up to date on each new episode. We have a lot of fun things in the pipeline for the show that we're working on to create more content and opportunities and just fun stuff. So make sure that you're connected in all of the ways so that you don't miss out on any of the new and exciting things that are coming. If you have any podcast topic requests or want questions, comments, concern, make sure you're following us on social media at Peaceful Barb, at Michelle Maros, and at Barb Knows Best Pod. That's always the best way to do so. Lastly, if you haven't yet, make sure you give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and Spotify and leave us a review. It's super helpful for the show and for us. We appreciate it. We love hearing from you, and we're really, really grateful for the time spent doing so. Thank you so much again for listening. Thank you, Mom, and we will chat with you next week, because as we know, Barb knows best. Bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% Lean Ground Sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.